Today is Monday. It is the 15th of August, and it is time to read from the Sioux City Journal. My name is Barb, and I will be reading to you today. We're going to start out with the weather, see what's happening in the five-day forecast, and then we'll go back to the front page, read stories of local, state, and national interest throughout the rest of the hour. So sit back and relax and enjoy listening to the news. The Siouxland five-day forecast. Today is cooler with some rain becoming breezy, high of 71. Tonight, periods of rain and a possible thunderstorm, low of 61. On Tuesday, humid with times of clouds and sun, high of 75, low of 56. Wednesday looks like a beautiful day, mostly sunny and humid, high of 76, low of 56. Thursday, humid with sun, high of 82, low of 59. And on Friday, mostly sunny and humid, high of 77, low of 56. So it looks like a milder week coming up. Hope you can enjoy it. All right, we're going to move back to the front page. See what's happening on our headlines. Okay, there's a picture of Siouxland Cycling Brothers making an annual trek on the Cowboy Trail. The title of the article is On the Road Again. Okay, and brothers Byron Thielander, a retired heating and cooling business owner from Ottawa, and Doug Thielander, a retired plumbing business owner from Castaigna, stay in shape through long-distance bicycling. In Ottawa, some people preferred taking the road less traveled. That's certainly the case with brothers Byron and Doug Thielander. For the past 5 years, Byron, a retired heating and cooling company owner from Ottawa, and Doug from Castaigna, have bicycled their way from Norfolk to Valentine, Nebraska, on a round-trip trek across the famous Cowboy Trail. The brothers are slated to make a return in mid-September. Running across Nebraska's so-called Outback region, the Cowboy Trail originally had train tracks belonging to the Chicago and Northwestern Railway. Eventually, this railway corridor was discontinued and the tracks were removed. Nowadays, a Cowboy Trail is a recreational trail used for hiking, horseback riding, and in the case of the Thielander brothers, bicycling. Our ride is over 400 miles, Byron explained. We'll ride 85 miles the first 2 days and then 60 or so for the next 6 days. While the scenery is beautiful, the ride can be both challenging and treacherous. A few years back, we had to ride on top of 8 inches of water. Downpours formed the night before would flood the trails. Good luck if you ever have a bicycle breakdown. After all, you are truly in the middle of nowhere. Indeed, the brothers had to be on the lookout for goatheads, a type of plant with an aggressively sharp burr. Goatheads are like cockleburrs on steroids. They can blow your tire. This roughing it aspect was a marked contrast with the Ragbri, the Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa, which the brothers had often previously ridden. On Ragbri, you're always in a crowd, and that's no fun. The Cowboy Trail is more challenging, plus the views are better. He's not kidding. The Pine Ridge, the Sandhills, and the valleys of the Niobrara River, the Elkhorn River, and the Lone Pike Creek. However, the Thielander brothers' cycling summer will start with a 200-mile round trip along the George S. Mickelson Trail in South Dakota's Black Hill region. Byron, age 69, estimated he will cycle around 3,000 miles this year, and Doug, age 71, will be even more active. While I was working, I couldn't take the time off, said Byron. While Doug and I don't feel old, we're able to enjoy our retirements. Plus, they're staying healthy while having fun. The challenges and discomforts of the ride are just short memories compared to the fun times, beautiful sceneries you miss just driving down the highway, and also the sense of accomplishment, which will all last a lifetime, said Byron. In other news, Sioux City Council to consider raising parking rates. Rates for municipal parking ramps and parking meters, as well as parking fines, could be going up in Sioux City. The City Council will be asked by staff on Monday to authorize adjustments to the parking ramp rates, meter charges, bagged meter charges, and parking fines in order to provide revenue to service the debt for repairs to the parking ramps and to buy new meters. The last rate increase for street meter fees occurred in 2007, while ramp fees and parking fines were raised in 2019, according to city documents. The current rate for metered parking is 60 cents per 30 minutes and 75 cents an hour. If the council votes in favor of the adjustments, those fees would increase to 80 cents 30 minutes and a dollar per hour. Parking meter overtime fines would rise from $10 to $14 after 30 days, rise from $15 to $21, and after 90 days, go up to $42. Other parking-related fines would increase from $35 to $50. After 30 days, go up to $55, and after 90 days, go to $70. At Heritage Rivers Landing, MLK, and Discovery parking ramps, the following rate increase for monthly users are proposed. One space, it will increase $5 a month from $50 to $55. And then subsequently, if you have 2 to 100 spaces, it'll go up to $50 per month, or 100 to 200 spaces up to $45 a month. And if you have over 200 spaces, your rate would be $43 a month. The revenue collected from the rate increases will result in a parking fund, which meets the criteria of the enterprise fund balance policy of a minimum fund balance of 15% of operating expenses, with the ending projected fund balance in year 5 should equal but not exceed 20%. In fiscal year 2023, the city budgeted $60,000 for meter replacement, $500,000 for the Rivers Landing elevator project, and $440,000 for revenue control equipment and $300,000 for United Center parking ramp repairs. All right, another front page news. Climate bill could help coal towns shift to nuclear. In Providence, Rhode Island, a major economic bill headed to the president has game-changing incentives for the nuclear energy industry, experts say, and those tax credits are even more substantial if a facility is sited in a community where a coal plant is closing. The transformative bill provides the most spending to fight climate change by any one nation ever in a single push. Among the many things it could do, nuclear energy experts say, is to spur more projects, like the one that Bill Gates is planning in Kemmerer, Wyoming. Gates' company, TerraPower, plans to build an advanced non-traditional nuclear reactor and employ workers from the local coal-fired power plant scheduled to close. Companies designing and building the next generation of nuclear reactors could pick one of two new tax credits available to carbon-free electricity generators such as wind and solar. To ensure coal communities have a place in the energy transition, both tax credits include a 10 percentage point bonus for facilities sited where residents have relied on fossil fuel plants or mining, a sizable incentive to locate them there, according to Matt Crozat, the Senior Director for Strategy and Development Policy Development at the Nuclear Energy Institute. That could include towns in coal-dependent West Virginia, since the state eliminated a ban on nuclear power plants this year, or in Maryland, where the state announced a partnership in June to look at repurposing a fossil fuel site for a small nuclear reactor, or in Montana, where lawmakers are looking at advanced nuclear reactors as a possible replacement for coal boilers. An expert in energy system analysis and decarbonization strategies has extensively researched the feasibility of replacing coal plants with emissions-free alternatives in China and Poland. He found that coal plants often make ideal sites for advanced high-temperature nuclear reactors. It's a growing trend, he said. Now it's being talked about everywhere, said Stefan Quist. He's also the founder of a consulting limited group in the United Kingdom. You have a site, you have a grid connection. You have equipment that can remain in use, and you have a workforce that could be retrained. A design by NuScale Power is the first to be fully certified in the United States. And the company is planning to begin operating in small modular reactor in 2029 at the Idaho National Laboratory. The company's chief financial officer, Chris Colbert, said former coal plants are ideal locations for advanced nuclear technology, in part because transmission lines are already in place. Colbert said he thinks potential customers will be more interested in the company's small, advanced reactors because of the incentives in the bill. There are nearly $375 billion in climate incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act. Among them is a new tax credit available to any carbon-free electricity generator. That includes new advanced nuclear reactors that begin construction in 2025 or later. Existing nuclear plants that expand their output could get credit for that additional electricity production. The credit is worth at least $25 per megawatt hour for the first decade the plant operates, according to the NEI. Or owners of a new carbon-free electricity generator could take advantage of the investment tax credit, worth 30% of the amount they pay to build the facility. The bill also has $700 million to produce the uranium fuel in the United States that many advanced reactors need. And there's a tax credit for existing nuclear plants worth up to $15 per megawatt hour from 2024 to 2032. That's enough of a boost that it's highly likely no nuclear plants will close during that period for economic reasons. There are expanded options for how the credit can be used with direct payments for certain owners, such as municipal utilities. The incentives are a game changer for the nuclear energy industry, said a professor of nuclear science and engineering at MIT. He has studied the future of nuclear energy in a carbon-constrained rule. This is very substantial, he said. This should move the needle in terms of making these technologies economically viable right off the bat. The professor liked the fact that the credits are available to many carbon-free technologies. It's not just nuclear or solar, it's all of the above, which we have been preaching as the right approach for decarbonization. You need to sort of push everybody here. But Grant Smith, a senior energy policy advisor at the Environmental Working Group, said tax credits for small modular nuclear units is a waste of taxpayer dollars. They divert resources from commercially viable emerging technology, and stokes the continuing false narrative of cheap, easily deployed nuclear technology that the sector has been spinning for decades. Smith leads a nonprofit's work on accelerating the transition to renewables. Georgia has the only nuclear project currently under construction in the U.S. Two traditional large reactors were projected to cost $14 billion and now are expected to cost more than $30 billion. Because of that, Biagiorno said he'd be shocked if there's another order for a large traditional reactor in the U.S. The perception of financial risk or project risk overall would be too high. There are roughly 40 serious concepts in development for the next generation of advanced nuclear reactors worldwide. China was the first to connect one of the next generations of reactors to its grid to produce about 200 megawatts of electricity. A high-temperature, gas-cooled reactor began operating last year. Okay, we'll move back to the front page. And we do have the mini-editorial left to read. I will see if I can get that up on my screen here. Don't think I can. Let me retry here. Sorry, it takes a little bit of time here. All right, the mini editorial. 77 years ago, our country last fought the Germans in World War II. They had a group called the Gestapo. That was their FBI and the Department of Justice. Now we have the FBI and the Department of Justice that are employing Gestapo-like tactics. This is the opinion of Tim Pluger of Lamar's, Iowa. On to the next page. In Top Talker today in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, the defense wants to show school shooter's brain exam to the jury. A defense mental health expert in the penalty trial of Florida school shooter Nicholas Cruz can pinpoint when he realized the 23-year-old mass murderer still has irrational thoughts. The two were making small talk when Cruz began describing plans for an eventual life outside prison. Wesley Center, a Texas counselor, said that happened last year at the Broward County Jail as he fitted Cruz's scalp with probes for a scan to map his brain. The defense at hearings this week will try to convince Circuit Judge Elizabeth Schreuer that Center and other experts should be allowed to testify at Cruz's ongoing trial about what their test showed, something the prosecution wants barred. He had some sort of epiphany while he was in jail that would focus his thoughts on being able to help people. His life purpose was helping others. Cruz, of course, will never be free. Since his arrest about an hour after he murdered 14 students and 3 staff members at Parkland's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School on February 14, 2018, there has never been any doubt his remaining years would be behind bars, sentenced to death or life without parole. Surveillance video shows him mowing down his victims with an AR-15-style rifle, and he confessed, eventually pleading guilty in October. Prosecutors made their argument for death to the 7-man, 5-woman jury and 10 alternates over 3 weeks, resting their case August 4th after the panel toured the still blood-stained, bullet-pocketed classroom building where the massacre happened. The jurors also watched graphic surveillance videos, saw a gruesome crime scene and autopsy photos, received emotional testimony from teachers and students who witnessed others die, and heard from tearful and angry parents, spouses, and other family members about the victims and how their loved one's death has impacted their lives. They watched video of the former Stoneman Douglas student calmly ordering an icy minutes before the shooting and 9 months later attacking a jail guard. Soon it will be Cruz's attorneys arguing why he should be spared, hoping to convince at least one juror their mitigating factors outweigh the prosecution's aggravating circumstances. A death sentence must be unanimous. But first, the trial took last week off to accommodate some jurors' requests to deal with personal matters. The jury will also be absent this week as the sides argue before Schreuer, the judge, who will be deciding whether brain scans, tests, and other evidence the defense wants to present starting August 22nd is scientifically valid or junk. Center's test and its findings will be subject to a contentious debate called a quantitative electrophalogram, or QEEG. Its backers say it provides useful support to such diagnoses as fetal alcohol syndrome, which Cruz's attorneys contend created his lifelong mental and emotional problems. EEGs have been common in medicine for a century, measuring brain waves to help doctors diagnose epilepsy and other brain ailments. But the QEEG analysis, which has been around since the 70s, goes a step further. A patient's EEG results are compared to a database of brainwaves taken from normal or neurotypical people. While the QEEG findings cannot be used to make a diagnosis, they can support findings based on the patient's history, exam, behavior, and other tests. A QEEG can confirm what you already know, but you can't create new knowledge. Dr. Charles Epstein from Emory University Neurology reviewed the center's findings for the prosecution. In a statement written to the judge, he said EEGs using only external scalp probes like the one given Cruz are imprecise, making the QEEG results worthless. Garbage in, garbage out, he wrote. Florida judges have given mixed rulings about allowing QEEGs since 2010, when the test helped a Miami area man escape a death sentence for fatally stabbing his wife and severely wounding her mentally disabled 11-year-old daughter. Some judges have since allowed their admission, while others barred them. Judge Schur, who is overseeing her first death penalty trial, has never had a case where the defense tried to present a QEEG report. Okay, we're going to continue on now to other news. On the road to recovery, Salman Rushdie. His agents said the author headed in the right direction after 2 days after the attack. In Mayville, New York, Salman Rushdie is on the road to recovery, his agent confirmed Sunday, 2 days after the author of the Satanic Verses suffered serious injuries in a stabbing at a lecture in New York. The announcement followed news that the lauded writer was removed from a ventilator Saturday and was able to talk. Literary giant agent Andrew Wiley cautioned that although Rushdie's condition is headed in the right direction, his recovery would be long. Rushdie, age 75, suffered a damaged liver and severed nerves in an arm and an eye that he was likely to lose. Though his life-changing injuries are severe, his usual feisty and defiant sense of humor remains intact, said Rushdie's son in a statement on Sunday that stressed the author remained in critical condition. The family statement also expressed gratitude for the audience members who bravely leapt to his defense, as well as police, doctors, and the outpouring of love and support. Hadi Matur, age 24, of Fairview, New Jersey, pleaded not guilty Saturday to attempted murder and assault charges in what a prosecutor called a targeted, unprovoked, pre-planned attack at Western New York's Chautauqua Institution, a nonprofit education and retreat center. The attack was met with global shock and outrage, along with praise for the man who, for more than 3 decades, including 9 years in hiding under the protection of the British government, has weathered death threats and a $3 million bounty on his head over his 1988 novel called The Satanic Verses. It's an attack against his body, his life, and against every value he stood for, Henry Reese, age 73, told the Associated Press. The co-founder of Pittsburgh's City of Asylum was on stage with Rushdie and suffered a gash to his forehead, bruising, and other minor injuries. They plan to discuss the need for writers' safety and freedom of expression. Authors, activists, and government officials cited Rushdie's bravery and longtime championing of free speech in the face of intimidation. Writer and longtime friend Ian McEwen labeled Rushdie an inspirational defender of persecuted writers and journalists, and actor-author Cal Penn called him a role model, especially for many of us in the South Asian area. Salman Rushdie, with his insight into humanity, with his unmatched sense for story and his refusal to be intimidated or silenced, stands for essential universal ideals, said President Joe Biden in a Saturday statement. Truth, courage, resilience, the ability to share ideas without fear. Rushdie, who was born in India to a Muslim family and has lived in Britain and the U.S., is known for his surreal and satirical prose. Infused with magical realism, the Satanic Verses drew ire from some Muslims who regarded elements of the novel as blasphemy. The book was banned and burned in India, Pakistan, and elsewhere when Iran's Grand Ayatollah Khomeini issued an edict calling for Rushdie's death in 1989. Khomeini died that same year, but the edict remains in effect. Iran's state-run newspaper, the Iran Daily, on Sunday praised the attack as an implementation of the divine decree. All right, we're going to continue on. Church fire leaves 41 dead. Burned furniture and religious images are seen at the site of a fire inside a Coptic church that killed 41 people and injured 16 others in Cairo. A fire ripped through a packed Coptic Orthodox Church during morning services in Egypt's capital on Sunday, quickly filling it with thick black smoke and killing 41 worshipers, including 15 children. Several trapped congregants jumped from upper floors to the martyr Abu Safin Church to try to escape the intense flames. Witnesses said, "Suffocation, suffocation, all of them dead," said a distraught witness. 16 people were injured, including 4 policemen involved in the rescue effort. The cause of the blaze at the church in the working-class neighborhood was not immediately known. An initial investigation pointed to an electrical short circuit, according to a police statement. Weeping families waited outside for word about relatives who were inside the church and at nearby hospitals where the victims were taken. Footage from the scene circulated online showing burnt furniture, including wooden tables and chairs. Firefighters were seen putting out the blaze while others carried victims to ambulances. Witnesses said there were many children inside the 4-story building, which had 2 daycare facilities. There are children we didn't know how to get to them, and we don't know whose son this is or whose daughter that is. Is that possible? A total of 15 children were killed in the fire. A list of victims obtained by the AP said 20 bodies, including 10 children, were taken to the public hospital. 3 were siblings, twins, age 5 and 3, and a 3-year-old. The church bishop was also among the dead at the hospital morgue. 21 bodies were taken to other hospitals. A spokesman for the Optic Orthodox Church told the AP that 5-year-old triplets, their mother, grandmother, and an aunt were among those killed. A witness said the church worker managed to get some children out of the church daycare facilities. "We went upstairs and found people dead. As we started to see from outside that the smoke was getting bigger, the people wanted to jump from the upper floor. We found the children, some dead, some alive." The country's health minister blamed the smoke and a stampede as people attempted to flee the church for causing the fatalities. It was one of the worst fire tragedies in Egypt in recent years. The church is located in a narrow street in one of the most densely populated neighborhoods in Cairo. Sunday was the first working day of the week, and traffic jams clogged the streets and surrounding areas in the morning. Some relatives criticized what they said were delays in the arrival of ambulance and firefighters. They came after the people died. They came after the church burned down. The health minister countered that the first ambulance arrived at the site 2 minutes after the fire was reported. The country's chief prosecutor ordered an investigation and a team of prosecutors were dispatched to the church. He said most victims died of smoke inhalation. In other news, much-needed Ukrainian grain is headed for Ethiopia. In Kyiv, Ukraine, a United Nations chartered ship loaded with 23,000 metric tons of Ukrainian grain destined for Ethiopia set sail on Sunday from the Black Sea port. It's the first shipment of its kind in a program to assist countries facing famine. The Liberia-flagged Brave Commander departed from the Ukrainian port east of Odessa, according to regional governor. It plans to sail to Ethiopia, where the grain will be uploaded and transferred to Ethiopia under the World Food Program. Ukraine and Russia reached a deal with Turkey on July 22nd to restart Black Sea grain deliveries, addressing the major export disruption that occurred since Russia invaded Ukraine in February. Ethiopia is one of the 5 countries that the UN considers at risk of starvation. The capacity is there, the grain is there, the demand is there across the world, and in particular these countries. So if the stars are aligned, we are very, very hopeful that all the actors around this agreement will come together on what is really an issue for humanity. So today was very positive. On the front line, Russian forces fired rockets Sunday on southern Ukraine, killing at least 1 person. That region is just north of the Russian-occupied city of Kherson, which Ukrainian forces have vowed to retake. The Ukrainian Emergency Service said one person was killed in shelling early Sunday. A Russian diplomat, meanwhile, called on Ukraine to offer security assurances so international inspectors could visit a nuclear power station in Ukraine that has come under fire. As fighting steps up in southern Ukraine, concerns have grown sharply about the nuclear power plant, which is held by Russian forces and has been hit by sporadic shelling. Both Ukraine and Russia blame each other for the shelling, which officials say has damaged monitoring equipment and could lead to a nuclear catastrophe. Okay, in some national news, in Chicago, three people were killed and another injured as they were struck by a car during a hit and run on a Chicago street. A sedan hit four males around 5 a.m. on the city's south side and then drove away. No one was in custody. Gas prices. The average U.S. price of regular grade gasoline plummeted 45 cents over the past 3 weeks to $4.10 per gallon. This comes as a continued decline comes as crude oil costs also remain low. In Kansas, an anti-abortion activist who heads a small hard-right Republican group said Saturday he offered to pay the expected $229,000 cost of a hand recount of votes from every Kansas county after a decisive statewide vote affirming abortion rights. And a police officer in Lafayette, Louisiana, is in critical condition after police say a suspect ran him over with a vehicle and dragged him 100 feet during an attempted traffic stop early Sunday. The driver was arrested. All right, we're going to continue on now. There is one obituary. Jean Carlson Hayden of Papillion, Nebraska, formerly of Ottawa, Iowa. Jean Carlson Hayden, age 93, died Wednesday, August 10th, 2022. Services will be August 16th at 1 p.m. at the Soldier Lutheran Church. Burial is following the services in the Jordan Cemetery in Soldier. Arrangements are with the Gosler Funeral Home and Monuments in Ottawa. A live stream of the service will be available at the funeral home's website. Svika Pick, prolific Israeli singer-songwriter, dies at 72. Svika Pick, a pillar of Israel's music industry who gained international attention after his song won the Eurovision Song Contest, has died. He was 72. Known as the maestro in Israeli pop circles, Pick was a singer, composer, and prolific songwriter who penned dozens of number one hits. After news of his death broke Sunday, Israeli radio stations cut off regular programming to broadcast his music. His catchy pop songs, stretching as far back as the 70s, became a soundtrack of the nation. He began his career on stage with a role in the musical Hair, and throughout the decade became a mainstay of the Israeli music scene. A collection of his songs was turned into a musical in the early 2000s. Among his best-known tunes was Diva, written in 1998, Eurovision Song Contest, and performed by singer Dana International. That song won the campy competition that year, and observers have repeatedly chosen it as among the best contest's all-time best entries. In a statement, Dana International called Pick an Israeli cultural icon, a trailblazer, a gifted composer, and the king of Israeli pop. We're going to move on. Kansas abortion vote shows limits of GOP's strength. In Topeka, Kansas, an increase in turnout among Democrats and independents and a notable shift in Republican-leaning counties contributed to the overwhelming support of abortion rights in traditionally conservative Kansas, according to the AP. A proposed state constitutional amendment would have allowed the Republican-controlled legislature to tighten restrictions or ban abortions outright, but Kansas voters rejected the measure by nearly 20 percentage points, almost a mirror of Republican Donald Trump's statewide margin over Joe Biden in the 2020 presidential election. In the aftermath of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to repeal a woman's constitutional right to an abortion, the threat of new restrictions in the state galvanized Democrats and independents more than anticipated. At the same time, Republicans showed less interest in turning out to support the measure. The findings reinforce a sense in both parties that the Supreme Court decision may have altered the dynamic of this year's midterm elections. Okay, some Capitol rioters try to profit from January 6th. Facing prison time and personal consequences for storming the U.S. Capitol, some January 6th defendants are trying to profit from their participation in the deadly riot, using it as a platform to drum up cash, promote business endeavors, and boost social media profiles. A Nevada man jailed on riot charges asked his mother to contact publishers for a book he was writing about the Capitol incident. A rioter from Washington State helped his father hawk clothes and other merchandise bearing slogans such as "Our House" and images of the Capitol building. A Virginia man released a rap album with riot-themed songs and cover photo of him sitting on a police vehicle outside the Capitol on January 6th. Those actions are sometimes complicating matters for defendants when they face judges at sentencing, as prosecutors point to the profit-chasing activities in seeking tougher punishments. The Justice Department, in some instances, is trying to claw back money that rioters have made off of the insurrection. In one case, federal authorities have seized tens of thousands of dollars from a defendant who sold his footage from January 6th. In another case, a Florida man's plea deal allows the U.S. government to collect profits from any book he gets published over the next 5 years. And prosecutors want a Maine man who raised more than $20,000 from supporters to surrender some of the money because a taxpayer-funded public defender is representing him. Many rioters have paid a steep personal price for their actions on January 6th. At sentencing, rioters often ask for leniency on the grounds that they already have experienced severe consequences for their crime. They've lost jobs or entire careers. Marriages have fallen apart and friends and relatives have shunned them or even reported them to the FBI. Strangers have sent them hate mail and online threats, and they racked up expensive legal bills to defend themselves against federal charges, ranging from misdemeanors to serious felonies. Let's look at the world of sports. The Rick Collins Toyota City Golf Championship. Colin Mitchell wins playoff for City Championship. And Mitch Merrill wins the senior title. Championship Sunday was a roller coaster for the championship flight of the 2022 Rick Collins Toyota City Championship at Green Valley Golf Club. The first-round leader, Johnny Douglas, stayed consistent through his second round, replicating his first-round 71 for a two-round score of 142. The problem was that Colin Mitchell, who sat tied for second after the opening round with a 72, scored a second-round 68 to put Mitchell's two shots clear of Douglas. The battle wasn't over as the top 12 competitors hit the course for a final nine round. Douglas rallied back to tie Mitchell in the final nine thanks to a 33. Colin Mitchell scored a 35, bringing both competitors to the total of 175. Colin Mitchell, who took the lead in the second round, then lost it on the final nine, regained it a final time, defeating Douglas in a playoff to win the city championship. The cooler temperatures and overcast condition allowed for scores to stay fairly low on Sunday. But Mitchell's second round of 68 was the only round under 70 during the weekend. Christian Knorr came in third place, seven shots behind the top two. Brian Evans scored a 185, and Ryan Gorsett and Mason Berger tied for fifth, scoring a 186. There was less drama in the senior championship. A former club professional at the Sioux City Country Club, Mitch Merrill shot a second round 72 to match his first round to win the championship. Congratulations to all. Hawkeyes Kids Day growth surprises parents. There's a picture of the Iowa defensive tackle Logan Lee and Orion of Orion interacts with a young fan after signing an autograph during the Hawkeyes Kids at Kinnick Day on Saturday prior to a public practice. In Iowa City at Iowa's annual Kids at Kinnick Open Practice, the Iowa Hawkeye football team experienced a bit of a growth spurt. Coach Kurt Ferens was somewhat surprised in a good way with what transpired after his team signed a few autographs and Iowa seniors entered the field at Kinnick Stadium with this year's kids' captains. "I was actually kind of pleased with what I saw overall," Ferens said following the Hawkeyes' first public appearance of the season and the first time Iowa took the field with officials putting their whistles to work. "I thought the guys moved around pretty well, had a good attitude and good focus. We had a good day on Friday that way in a non-contact day, and the guys handled it well, and today we were relatively clean." He suspects the tape will reveal plenty of things to work on as the Hawkeyes progress toward their September 3rd season opener against South Dakota State. But Ferens also expected to see some areas he liked. He singled out two areas that he was particularly pleased with: the work of place kicker Aaron Bloom and Drew Stevens, and Iowa's efficiency during its work on third down situations. We'll continue on. See what else we have here. Let's read some business news. From the Motley Fool: make your kids investors. One of the best gifts you can give your kids in helping them become savvy about money. Here are some ideas. Talk about money regularly. Let your kids see how you make financial decisions and work toward financial goals. Even how you pay your bills. Discuss your successes and challenges. Help them learn what such things as housing, utilities, and gasoline actually cost. Another way is an online search for money as you grow will turn up a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau site full of activities, teaching tips, and resources for kids of various ages. Younger kids can also learn from the Warren Buffett Secret Millionaires Club cartoon series, which is on YouTube and elsewhere. Get kids interested in investing in stocks via a mock portfolio. Whether on paper or using an online portfolio tracker, available on sites such as finance.yahoo.com, assemble a bunch of publicly traded companies your kids know and admire. Include their ticker symbols and stock prices as of the day that you add them. Some examples may be Amazon, Apple, Coca-Cola, Costco, Disney, GM, Hasbro, McDonald's, Microsoft, Netflix, Nike, Starbucks, and Walmart. Pretend they have bought the shares, then start following the companies in the news and checking their quarterly reports, seeing how the stock shares fluctuate and shrink or grow over time. Show them how much their investments would have earned. Stress that long-term results are what really matter and that even great companies can slump over a few months or even a year. Another idea is actually let your kids invest. When you think they're ready, you might help them by actually investing via a custodial account opened at a major brokerage, or be less formal and buy a few shares at their direction in your own account. Kids can fund Roth IRAs too if they have earned income, even from babysitting. Finally, have them check out our book, The Motley Fool Investment Guide for Teens, 8 Steps to Having More Money Than Your Parents Ever Dreamed Of. Some good ideas. Okay, here's a couple questions about investments. Question: where might I look up a company's stock split? Start at the horse's mouth by calling the company's investor relation department and asking. An investor's section of the company's website might also have that information. Or head to finance.yahoo.com, type in the company's ticker symbol, and then you can click on statistics and scroll down to see the company's last split and its date, or click on historical data to look up many past splits. Searching online for stock split calendar will show you recent and upcoming splits. Don't get too excited about splits, though. They may be kind of exciting, but they really can't be that meaningful. Yes, a regular stock split will suddenly leave you with more shares, but the share price would have been adjusted downward proportionately. If your 100 shares become 200 or 400, your previous stock price will have gone down from, say, $40 to $20 or $10 respectively, leaving your investment total value unchanged. Warren Buffett's mentor, Benjamin Graham, reportedly said, quote, "In the short run, the market is a voting machine, but in the long run, it is a weighing machine." What does that mean? Answer: when measured in days or even months, a stock price reflects its popularity with investors voting by buying and selling, sending prices up and down. Hot stocks will rise in price while out-of-favor stocks will slump. But over the years, a stock's price will reflect or approach the value of the underlying company based on factors such as revenue, earnings, and projected growth rates. A stock's true intrinsic value is what really matters, making it smart to be a long-term investor. Let's look at the Refresh to Impress, five of 2022's best redesigned vehicles. There are two key points within the life cycle of a vehicle: the introduction of the fully redesigned model and a significant midlife update. If you're looking to maximize your new vehicle purchase, knowing these timelines might help you make the best decision. An automaker's marketing might literally describe the vehicle as all new at both points, but it's important to know the difference. A midlife update typically ushers in appealing styling tweaks or feature updates, but a full redesign introduces full wholesale changes to the vehicle. These improvements, which can include better fuel economy, more power, and new helpful technology features, can be dramatic. With this in mind, experts have selected five noteworthy redesigned vehicles for 2022 that are worth looking into. The first one is the Acura MDX. Its three-row midsize SUV has been on sale since 2000 and enters a new generation for 2022. It has new exterior styling, additional legroom in all three rows, and improved interior materials. More than before, the MDX comes across as a bona fide luxury SUV. Starting price is $49,000. The second one is the Honda Civic. The Honda Civic is a compact sedan with 50 years of refinement. For 2022, it bundles its reliable attributes in a more mature body style. Compared to the outgoing Civic's edgy design, the latest model is modest, even more boring, but appreciated. Another one is the Hyundai Tucson, with a starting price of $27,000. In the pickup area, a hot Toyota Tundra, starting price $39,000. Since its introduction in 1999, Toyota has nurtured a growing group of loyal customers. The last generation Tundra was introduced in 2007, and it started to lag behind competitors. So the design now has a smoother ride, a robust base, turbocharged V6, and a hybrid model that cranks up the power and offers improved fuel economy. And lastly, the Subaru BRZ. It's become an enthusiast icon in just 10 years. Attainable and lightweight, and available with a manual transmission, the Sport Coupe can be an entry point for blossoming drivers and a weekend toy for those with little cash to spare, with a starting price of $29,000. Redesigned for 2022, it has revised styling, a more powerful engine, and an updated interior. In entertainment news, Jon Batiste leaves Stephen Colbert's The Late Show. Jon Batiste, his career soaring after winning multiple Grammys this year, is leaving his perch as bandleader of The Late Show after a seven-year run backing up host Stephen Colbert. "We've been so lucky to have a front-row seat to Jon's incredible talent for the last 7 years," Colbert said. "But we're happy for you, John, and I can't wait to have you back on as a guest with your next record hit." Louis Cato, who has served as the interim band leader this summer, will take over on a permanent basis when the show returns for its 8th season. He's been with the show since its launch. Cato has worked with the likes of Beyoncé, Mariah Carey, and John Legend, and is working on a new album. Colbert called him a musical genius. All right. I think that's the end of our reading today. I'm going to do a quick recap of the weather, and then we will sign off for the day. I'm having to page through to get back to our weather page here, so bear with me for a moment. This week looks a lot milder than we've had in the past this summer. Today, rainy, cooler, becoming breezy, high of 71. Tonight, windy with low of 61. Tuesday, humid with times of clouds and sun, high of 75. Wednesday, high of 76, mostly sunny. Thursday, humid with sun and clouds, high of 82. And a little cooler on Friday, sunny and 77. Hope you enjoy your week. My name is Barb. I have enjoyed reading to you today. Thank you for joining me. I also want to thank the Sioux City Journal and the Iowa Reading Radio Network. Thanks and have a great week ahead.